So Vic Carucci is kind enough to join us from the Buffalo News. And Vic, this is a really big game. First off, I want to begin with Rex Ryan. How has he been this week in regards to his temperament, looking towards Oakland, a 9-2 team, when it looks like it's clearly a must-win game for Buffalo?
Yeah, for sure it's a must-win game, to say the least. Every one that they play in these last five, there is no margin for error if they have any hope of breaking a 16-year run of being out of the playoffs. And this is, of course, year two of Rex Ryan, and still a lot of questions about whether the Bills are a team that is ready to take that next step or are consistent with what most Rex Ryan teams have been since he's been in coaching, counting those 6 years with the Jets, which is a middle-of-the-road 8-8 football team, just like they were last year.
Well, this team isn't middle of the road when it comes to being number one in rushing. Why is that working? Is it because not only is Shady McCoy healthy, but this offensive line, how good are they? How much credit do they deserve?
Well, I think they deserve a lot of credit. Anytime you're dealing with a strong running game like Dallas's, for instance, you start with the line, and this line's played well. Now, I'm not suggesting it's anywhere near as good as the Cowboys. I don't think it's as good as the Dolphins' line when healthy has been for Jay Ajayi, but I do think that it's been a factor. Richie Incognito, kind of a rebirth here in his second season with the Bills. They were very strong at center with Eric Wood before he suffered a season-ending broken leg at the against Seattle a few weeks back. But getting good, solid play throughout. But then beyond that, it's just immense talent from LeSean McCoy, just exceptional things that he can do, elusive, explosive. And he's playing really well at the late stages of a running back's career, still has a lot of life in his legs, although, again, still dealing, you know, has dealt with an injury or two this year, but overall a little bit healthier than he was last year, and he was a Pro Bowler last year.
Vic, how do they go from number one in rushing offense at over 157 yards a game to dead last, 32 in a pass offense?
Yeah, and here is the common denominator, and that, of course, would be quarterback Tyrod Taylor, because he's a part of this running contribution. Outstanding, best running quarterback in football, period. And he was a huge part of it last year, and when he was number two in the league in quarterback rushing behind Cam Newton, and he's been up there this year with his running. But as a thrower, as a passer, that's where the questions come into play. I think he's been extremely careful with the football. You see a guy who has not thrown a lot of interceptions, and I think a big part of that is because he doesn't take those chances, and I think your better quarterbacks, your bigger number guys, so to speak, do challenge defenses more. He will take the safer route, or he just doesn't trust what he sees or doesn't see it. He's a smaller guy. It's still about finding lanes, even when you're a smaller guy and moving around. But that's been a factor in his game, and I think at times he'll take a sack more than he'll risk trying to throw an interception.
Vic Carucci is our guest, one of the best NFL insiders, period, with the Buffalo News. He joins us on the official Raiders podcast. And, Vic, I want to get into the Raiders defense. You see 29th overall, 28th against the pass, 26th against the rush. Does Rex and the staff look at this as an opportunity to attack downfield against the Raiders secondary, or just stay with the meat and potatoes, or run in the football, maybe run right at Khalil Mack, who's the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and maybe running at the Raiders' strength will be an asset for them?
Yeah, I think you would be looking at the same thing I am, which would be the obvious sort of approach that the Raiders have given up those bigger plays through the air. So challenge them. If Sammy Watkins can be, I think, even more than he was last week, his first game back after eight, dealing with lingering issues from offseason foot surgery, and the offensive coordinator, Anthony Lynn, saying, you know, this is still a broken foot, but he's dealing with pain tolerance issue there. Caught a 62-yard pass last week, but really only three catches. He has to be a bigger factor. The Bills have had so many injuries in the receiving core that it might limit their ability to take advantage of that. But I see that as the part. Charles Clay, tight end, I see that as the part of this game where the Bills have to make hay. And, of course, Tyrod Taylor has to be able to escape Khalil Mack and the rest of that rush and make those throws. No easy task there. And the other part of this is, as you say, run at Mac, run at a line that I think by Jack Del Rio's design is going to come more upfield, right? Charging more upfield. So a lot of those delays and draws and counterplays tend to be more effective if you have the right people executing
them. What's it like covering Marcell Dareus, who's considered the best defensive tackle in football, had some problems off the field? Where is he in regards to his focus, his playmaking ability? How big of a concern should that be to the Raiders' offensive line?
It should be a huge concern because he's not only a huge guy, but a very strong guy and an extremely talented guy. He can be a game-wrecking type of player, a term that's used a lot with Mac. I think he's got those skills. He, of course, has another issue, and that is, you know, having missed 8 games this year, 4 because of a substance abuse suspension, 3 with a hamstring issue, and 1 with a groin injury. And he's dealing now with an abdominal injury that he suffered apparently last week their last game against Jacksonville, but by all accounts he'll play. But he is such a beast and a force. He had one of his better games as a Bill, 2 sacks, 3 quarterback pressures, just was in the backfield a lot, and he was not on the field for the final 2 stops that the Bills had against Jacksonville. And I think he is but a force that I like the matchup because it's the Raider offensive line, one of the better ones in the league, going up against this top tackle.
Vic Carucci's our guest. Tell us about Lorenzo Alexander and his journey to 10 sacks on the year.
Well, what a great story, first of all. And you know the guy there, of course. Quality person, and I think just coming from where he was, 300-pound defensive tackle, player who also was a backup guard, started out special teams way back in the day, with Washington, I guess it was. And now he's this 240-ish pound guy, strong and sleek, and gets to the ball. But I think that the real key to it is, you know, give credit to Jerry Hughes on the other side, because Jerry flushes a lot of those plays to Lorenzo's side. Not to take anything away from Lorenzo, by the way. You've got to make the plays when they come to you. But he's been part of that. He's also just so smart. Gets in the right position, understands a complicated defense. The Rex Ryan, Rob Ryan scheme has a lot of layers to it, a lot of demands on on linebackers especially, and outside linebackers and linemen, and a lot of changes in their responsibilities right during the course of the game, if not during the course of a play or pre-snap. So he's so good at that because he's smart.
Yeah, I had Derek Harvick on my show Monday. It's the first thing he brought up about the blitz packages and what he expects to see from the Ryans coming at him. You cover the NFL also nationally. Your assessment of Carr, especially coming off the pinky injury, coming back, going out and leading the Raiders back to beat Carolina, a 9-2 quarterback now, and the progress he's made in his young career.
Such a great story, and I got to tell you, I feel this personal attachment because I was with the Cleveland Browns. I had worked, as you know, for them for about 4 years, their internal media stuff, hosted a radio show there. I think you were on it with me at one point. And did all the web stuff. And anyway, my favorite quarterback in that 2014 draft was Derek Carr. And he really won me over down at the Senior Bowl and spent some time talking with him and getting to know him a little bit. Not that you get to know these guys a lot, but really studied his backstory and dug in and said, I'm telling you, this will be the solution for the perpetually bad Browns and not needing that quarterback. Here's your guy. Take him. And I trumpeted that as much as I could. Of course, we know the rest of the story. Johnny Manziel ends up being their pick. But when you look at it, he had those qualities that I thought would make him a success just coming out of college, that exceptional maturity and poise and just a big time presence that he brought with him. Nothing's too big for him. And then go along with the talent he has and taking advantage and then surrounding him. You know, they did it so right there because before they bring in an Amari Cooper and before you get a Michael Crabtree, what do you get? You fix the quarterback thing. And they did that with that choice. And then if you eventually can get a tight end in there of a high caliber quality and a consistent workhorse back, you're looking at something that's pretty scary.
Wrapping it up with Vic Carucci, breaking down Buffalo at Oakland on Sunday. You know, you knew Al Davis. Now Mark Davis owns the team, the primary owner of the team. I want to talk about the Pegulas, a husband and wife team, and now with the management underneath them. What have they been like as owners? How much pressure is on the staff below them after this drought that they've had with the playoffs? Are they patient owners? Is it wearing thin on them? Where do they stand within the community of all these other owners in regards to the pressure and the will to win right now?
Well, yeah, I think it would be naive to think that any owner is truly patient, but there are some organizations where we've seen more consistency through some tougher times and good times, but it's usually warranted, right? The track record of success usually backs that up. In Buffalo, it's been too much of a revolving door, and I think it would be a mistake to pull the plug this fast into the Ryan regime. But having said that, you know, it's you never know if things really were to go. I think things would really have to go super sideways over these next 5 weeks, and you know, not necessarily a lost Sunday, because that's a 9-2 team taking on a 6-2. Club that's on the fringes of postseason hope, whereas you've got a club there that's really the best team arguably in the AFC, and maybe more so now with Rob Gronkowski going to miss a lot of time for New England. So I think, you know, when you look at it, you say, okay, where would the problem spots be? And I think, you know, they fired their offensive coordinator after two games, Greg Roman, who you know from the Bay Area, had been with San Francisco, seemed to improve with some of the things they were doing offensively with Anthony Lynn taking over that spot since then. But if the defense, I mean, the numbers are better with the sacks, but they're having problems at the back end. They have had a lot of injuries, but do owners excuse that? I mean, that's really Rex Ryan's out. If they are at or below 500 again and missing the playoffs, I think part of his message to ownership would be, okay, look, our top two draft picks were injured, one of them for the whole year, Reggie Ragland from Alabama, the second pick overall for them. And I think, and then they got Shaq Lawson for like half a season, and he's been pretty solid, the number one pick. But overall, you know, Sammy Watkins, mostly out of the lineup so far. Darius, mostly out of the lineup so far. When does that become something ownership will understand and say, okay, let's give you another year with a full deck?
Vic, finally, you've been a Hall of Fame voter for a while. You still have that status?
I do.
Okay, just a couple of quick ones. If you can sum up to our audience, Tom Flores, obviously Jim Plunkett, and most importantly, Cliff Branch. The arguments for or against or what's happening, because the Raiders were finally excited for Ken Stabler. What a shame. He already passed on. What that meant to the Davis family, obviously, in the Raider Nation. Where do those three individuals stand, in your opinion, and in the room?
Well, you know, obviously three exceptional players, people and players that meet the criteria of I think what a Hall of Famer should, you know, be considered. Now, is there going to be a lot of conversation? Yeah, a whole lot of conversation to go with it before you could say, okay, this guy's a Hall of Famer. But I would be more than open to hear in depth what the advocacy for those individuals would be. I mean, I witnessed Cliff Branch through his career, a good portion of his career, and know what a difference-making player he was. Receivers have a very hard time with the Hall of Fame, and there is a built-in prejudice that I've sensed through voters through the years, even before I got in that room, that it's just, you know, the numbers, especially as time has gone on. I mean, he played in an era when the rules weren't as favorable to receivers as they are now, and would get beat up, as many receivers do coming off the line. But I mean, if you make a case for Fred Biletnikoff, that's where you look at it, is in the same context. Can you make the same case for Branch? And I think it's makeable. I mean, I think it's makeable. Flores, for sure, as a coach. You know, you look at what he did and what he meant to the consistency of that organization and what they achieved under him. And then, you know, Jim Plunkett, and obviously in that same era with Flores winning a Super Bowl, you know, you look at the work he's done, or he did, excuse me, and revitalizing his career. And I think kind of the same conversation, more modern conversation, is Kurt Warner, right? The current conversation with him is you look at the spots. He did great stuff at St. Louis, did great stuff with Arizona. In between was that one ugly year with the Giants. With Plunkett, you know, you got to rectify why it took for him to ultimately be a cast off and then make it work as he did with the Raiders. And again, those are deep discussions and not easy ones.
Awesome, Vic. I'm happy we were able to do that. I'll see you Sunday in the press box and on the field. Thanks so much for doing this.
Looking forward to it. Okay.
Thank you, Vic. We appreciate it. Vic Carucci joining us on the official Raiders podcast. Fantastic insider, a guy who knows the league inside and out.